For 30 years, I've tried to write about American history, especially the history of American politics. It is extremely hard work, but gratifying over the long haul. Writing historical pieces about American music and about Bob Dylan wouldn't have been in the cards but for a fluke, the result of strange good fortune dating back to my childhood. While I was growing up in Brooklyn Heights, my family ran the 8th Street Bookshop in Greenwich Village, a place that helped nurture the beat poets of the 1950s and the folk revivalists of the early 1960s. My father, Elias Wilentz, edited The Beat Scene, one of the earliest anthologies of beat poetry. Down from the shop on McDougal Street was an epicenter of the folk music explosion, the Folklore Center, run by my father's friend Israel Young, whom everyone called Izzy, an outsized enthusiast with an impish grin and a heavy Bronx Jewish accent. Nothing in that setting was anything I had sought out or had any idea was going to become important. As things turned out, I was just lucky. On occasional pleasant Sundays, we'd take family strolls that almost always included a stop at the Folklore Center, which was crowded wall to wall with records and stringed instruments and had a little room in the back where musicians hung out. My first memories of Bob Dylan, or at least of hearing his name, are from there. Izzy and my dad would talk about what was happening on the street, and I, a son who wanted to look and act like his father, would eavesdrop. Only much later did I learn that Dylan first met Allen Ginsberg, late in 1963, in my uncle's apartment above the bookshop. A few buildings north of Izzy's store, next to the Kettle of Fish Bar, a staircase led down into a basement club, where Dylan acquired what it took to make himself a star. The Gaslight Cafe, at 116 McDougal, was the focal point of a block-long spectacle of hangouts and showcases, including the Café Wa, where Dylan played his first shows in the winter of 1961. Down adjoining tiny Minetta Lane, around the bend on Minetta Street, there was another coffee house, the Commons, later known as the Fat Black Pussycat. These places, along with the Bitter End and Mills Tavern on far more touristy Bleecker Street, and Gertie's Folk City on West 4th Street, were Bob Dylan's Yale College and his Harvard. The neighborhood had a distinguished bohemian pedigree. A century before, over on the corner of Bleecker and Broadway, Walt Whitman loafed in a beer cellar called Pfaff's, safe from the jibing mainstream critics, whom he called Hooters. A little earlier, a few blocks up McDougal, in a long-gone house on Waverly Place, Anne Charlotte Lynch ran a literary salon that hosted Herman Melville and Margaret Fuller, and where a neighbor, Edgar Allan Poe, first read to an audience his poem, The Raven. Eugene O'Neill, Edna St. Vincent Millay, E.E. Cummings, Maxwell Bodenheim, and Joe Gould, among others, were 20th century habitués of McDougal Street. When Dylan arrived in the village, the Gaslight was the premier McDougal Street venue for folk singers and stand-up comics. Opened at the end of the 1950s as a beat poet's cafe, for which it received a curious write-up in the New York Daily News, then the quintessential reactionary city tabloid, the Gaslight proclaimed itself, carnival style, as world famous for the best entertainment in the village. Unlike many of the other clubs, it was not a so-called basket house, where walk-on performers of widely ranging competence earned only what they managed to collect in a basket they passed around the audience. The Gaslight was an elite spot where talent certified by Dave Van Ronk and other insiders, as many as 6 performers a night, received regular pay. Not that the place was fancy in any way. Pine-paneled, until its owners stripped it down to its brick walls, and faintly illuminated by fake Tiffany, or, as Van Ronk called them, Tiffanoid, lamps, the Gaslight had leaky pipes that dripped on what passed for a stage, no liquor license, that's what brown paper bags and the Kettle of Fish were for, a tolerable sound system, and hardly any room. If one used a crowbar and a mallet, it might have been possible to jimmy 100 people in there. The threat of a police raid, for noisiness or overcrowding or refusing to play along and pay off the mob, was constant. But on McDougal Street, playing the Gaslight was like playing Carnegie Hall. Van Ronk was the king of the hill among the Gaslight's folk singers. The MC was Noel Stuckey, who became the Paul of Peter, Paul, and Mary. And the headliners included Tom Paxton, Len Chandler, Hugh Romney, better known as the late 1960s psychedelic prankster and communalist Wavy Gravy, and young comics like Bill Cosby and Woody Allen. When Dylan, with Van Ronk's imprimatur, cracked the Gaslight's prestigious Performers' Circle in 1961, he secured $60 a week, which gave him enough to afford the rent on a 4th Street apartment, and took a big step toward real fame and fortune. "It was a club I wanted to play, needed to," Dylan recalls in his memoir, Chronicles Volume 1. A remarkable tape survives of what appears to have been a splicing together of two of Dylan's Gaslight performances, recorded in October 1962, in accord with what then qualified as professional recording standards. Widely circulated for many years as a bootleg, the tape was eventually released in abbreviated form in 2005 as a limited edition compact disc, Live at the Gaslight 1962. The singer may have left his harmonica rack at home. In any case, this is one of the few early recordings where he performs for an audience without his harmonicas. But for all of its unpretentious, even impromptu qualities, the tape reveals how greatly and rapidly Dylan's creativity was growing. A year earlier, Van Ronk's first wife, Terry Thall, had recorded Dylan, also at the Gaslight but with far inferior equipment, in an attempt to persuade club owners in nearby cities to hire the young singer. Someone stole the tape from Thall. It has long been available as a vinyl LP and on compact disc, known to collectors as the first Gaslight tape. As a business scheme, the recording flopped, even though it included the best of Dylan's first songs, Song to Woody. A year later, though, Dylan had jumped to the level of composing A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, a song The World Beyond the Village and the folk revival would not hear until its release more than 6 months later on Dylan's second album, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan.